Hello and welcome to Zero Hour with our host, Tim Bowring. Today's show is an ongoing series that explores Hanover's and the surrounding Metro Richmond's thriving art scene and the people who make it happen. Normally I'm here with Hugh Joyce, but he's off today on assignment. Every Wednesday at 12:30, we sit down with one of these folks. Conversation is lively and spontaneous, so pull up a chair and meet some fascinating people. Today, we are thrilled to have Paloma, and I'm just going to have to fumble with this. So it's Paloma Barra Bordas?
Close, very close.
Okay, say it again.
Barra Bordas.
Okay, Paloma Barra Bordas?
Very good.
Okay. Today, we are thrilled to have Paloma Barra Bordas with us. Welcome, Paloma.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay, so Denver.
Born
How
and
in
raised.
The world did you end up here?
That's a great question. I don't know. I lived for 18 years in Denver, and that just my childhood and through high school. And I think I kind of hightailed it out of there afterwards.
Right.
But I think it might actually be interesting to sort of skip to the part where I found out I was moving to Richmond.
Right.
Where I was as far away from Denver as you might be able to get in Berlin, Germany.
Right.
And I had gone there with the intention of staying either for 2 weeks or forever.
In Berlin?
Yeah.
Right.
And
well, most people do that, you know. They go from Denver to Berlin and then Richmond.
That's usually... Right. Precisely. Yeah. So I had submitted a job application to VCU prior to leaving.
Uh-huh.
It was a little bit rushed, but I was excited about the prospect. And I got an interview while I was there in Berlin. So...
An interview for?
For a printmaking position at VCU.
Okay.
Ah. Yeah. And I had actually just finished graduate school, so I think I maybe had literally jumped for joy.
Yeah. Where'd you go to graduate school?
Rhode Island School of Design.
Okay.
So Providence, Berlin, Richmond.
Richmond, right. Yes.
So I got the interview and I had to borrow a computer to do a Skype interview with Arnold Kemp and Holly Morrison.
Mm-hmm.
And navigate a computer programmed in German.
Right.
But it was a really exciting interview, and I got the job, and I cut my trip short.
Did you really get the job on Skype?
Uh-huh. I did.
I wonder how often that happens.
It's a great question.
Yeah.
Yeah, because...
Do you find Skype weird? I don't want to get too far off
totally
on this.
I think it's totally weird.
Yeah. The first time I did it, it was like, I'm like looking at the person, but I'm not looking at the person.
Right.
It's like they're there, but they're not there. It's really weird.
They shouldn't give you that option to have your tiny... self-portrait right. in the corner.
Because you end up talking to yourself.
It's
you know?
A real narcissistic activity.
Unlike art.
Right.
Right.
So, but I mean, it went fairly seamlessly for all the things that usually go wrong with Skype,
right.
all the glitches.
Right.
And I'm always just, I think, a very enthusiastic person when it comes to printmaking. It's just my bread and butter. It makes my day. So
right. okay.
I think I really was able to convey that in a visual presence through the Skype interview.
Mm-hmm. How did you get into printmaking? I'm always fascinated with that.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
Because normally just the words printmaking mm-hmm. are kind of like, oh, really? I mean, if you don't know anything about art, it's like,
it's a side route.
That's what you do. You know, people go, painter got it, sculptor got it, printmaker.
Yeah, I know. It's like, why didn't you become a graphic designer?
Because people
think it might lead to more job prospects, but I don't know that that's true.
And in your case, it certainly wasn't. So, you know, since you have a job here. So.
Right. Well, it took me a little while to get that job. And I think, I'm not a particularly religious person, but a coming to Jesus, you might say, with my deep-seated love and affinity for the medium. My first printmaking class was when I was a sophomore in college at Carleton College in Northfield, Minnesota.
Really?
Yeah. And I think I was in denial for a long time about wanting to be an artist.
What were you doing at Carleton College in Minnesota?
I know. Leaving Denver?
Really? Circuitous.
Right. Going.
Really? Circuitous.
Going to the coldest place I possibly could.
Yeah.
Carleton was a magnificent experience. And I think if I hadn't had the mentor that I had there in printmaking, his name is Fred Hagstrom. And to this day, he is a great contact for me. He's got several books at the VCU Book Arts Library, which is this kind of wonderful connection to my roots.
So that's okay.
And I took a class with him, I think because all of my friends were taking printmaking classes and making these like radical posters that I thought were just so great.
Okay.
And that was a fairly subdued time politically. It was maybe the first time I had ever voted in an election. It was
so when was this?
What was Bush's first election?
Okay.
Or maybe his second. It was his second election. So was that 2008?
Got me.
No,
but
no,
anyway.
No. 2004.
Yeah, right.
It was 2004. So I was very stirred by these political leanings and kind of didn't find that resonating with a lot of my classmates. But in the printmaking facility and studio, I felt really empowered as a young person, as an artist, and as an agent.
Politically empowered?
Yeah. I thought that it was a really magnificent medium with a very strong history of political roots that I connected with. And I felt that through the factors that ground it in history, which are as a democratic medium, as something that's meant for distribution, not necessarily intended for really elite audiences, but really for the people.
Right.
I felt by making art in that way through that history, I was connecting with that history as well as an artist and as a political person.
What kind of printmaking were you doing?
I don't even know that it was that political in the end, or that my political artwork has been my best artwork.
I mean, even the mechanics of it, what were you doing?
The first class I took was in lithography.
Right.
Then I took etching.
Which some people know what lithography is, but
oh, yeah. Shall I explain?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, I'm pretty good at explaining it for an audience of novices at this point, because I teach it to almost 100 students a year.
Okay.
So printmaking, let's see, the subcategory of lithography is one of the newest. I think this is sort of it's counterintuitive because it seems like a really antiquated form, but it is actually one of the newest developments in printmaking at the tender age of 200 years old.
Right.
So it began as a process that was done on limestone. And limestone surfaces, they're like gigantic bricks.
So you're talking
bricks.
Literally about lithography.
Yeah.
Literally
stone
about
lithography.
Say that five times fast. Okay.
Yes. Right. I could say it all day.
Right. Yeah.
So you're using a limestone that has been surfaced to a very smooth finish, very flat, and ranging in a wide variety of sizes. And the surface of it is sensitive to both oil and water. So you use an oil compound to draw on it.
Right.
And the rest of the area remains sensitive to water. So it's really quite simple. It's a water and oil reaction where the oil is the drawing material and the ink that you put down. And the water is your negative space. It's the white area.
Right.
So you make an impression by drawing on the stone and putting it through a press. It goes under a tremendous amount of pressure.
What are you drawing with?
Crayons.
Oh, okay.
Draw,
right.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, like
wax,
almost anything.
Okay.
And that's the beauty of lithography is really the mark-making capacity of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think some of the most familiar lithographs are images that very much look like pencil drawings, but they're highly repeatable. It's really easy to make copies of them. The print process is very quick, and it has been adapted to be used widely in commercial processes. So now they use polyester.
How many prints can you get off a stone? I mean,
at least 100.
Really?
If you process it correctly.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And then we now use polyester plates and a process called offset printing, not in the fine arts category of lithography printing, but for magazines, for newspapers, they all use this process because it's extremely fast and really has a durable image.
Right. Okay.
And a huge range of mark making, from photographic to the handmade mark to a water wash. You can accomplish all of it.
So you're doing lithography now, I assume?
Not in my practice so much, actually.
Oh, okay.
I have a speedier process.
What's your speedier process?
It involves kind of everything. I mean, it's much more intuitive than I think lithography and printmaking in general requires like a start point and an end goal that you execute over a certain amount of time.
Right.
And there's not a lot of room for improvisation because you're so beholden to a really strict process, which I think these processes are really a beautiful way to connect with art making. But at certain times in your life, you want something immediate. You want to just make a mark on the page, tear it up and start again, or paint over it and paint over that again. So I find myself using a press on a very regular basis, but doing things like using Xeroxes to make prints off of. So Xeroxes, like lithographs, have a surface that ink sticks to, the toner.
Right.
So you wet the Xerox, literally you soak it, and roll ink onto it.
What are the Xeroxes of?
Plants, a lot of times. A lot of Xeroxes of plants.
So you're doing this outdoors with a Xerox machine. I'm starting to get a good image here. And you grew up in Denver, but right. moved to Minnesota. Okay,
right.
I'm getting it now.
Right.
All right. No, really. So you're bringing in, what are you bringing in? Plant leaves, plant?
Well, let me think. The most recent Xeroxes I've made have been of smoke, and that kind of leads
of
me
what?
To, of smoke.
Smoke.
Yeah. Well,
how do you Xerox smoke?
I pulled it off the internet. I'm going to be honest with you. I mean, this is 2014.
So you've got all right. No, that's cool. That's cool. So you've got an image of smoke that you pulled off the internet, and then Xerox an image of the smoke.
Uh huh.
Okay. All right.
Right.
So this is getting interesting. All right.
Yeah.
Right.
And then you roll ink onto it, you transfer it onto a piece of paper. Could I have used the Xerox? Yes, but the paper falls apart and right. it's really cheap. That cheapness is great sometimes. Mm-hmm. And Xerox toner is beautiful in its own right. But I can make them really big. I can make them any color I want to and really fast. And then I can start painting on top of that.
Okay. All right. So that essentially is... I mean, is that really where you're starting most of your projects now with smoke images?
Well, it was for this project that I recently
I don't even know what
completed.
A smoke image looks like. What does it look like?
Well, you could think of, I mean, I think I work around college students, so they're mm-hmm. exhaling a lot of smoke. Oftentimes.
Do you mind exhaling over this Xerox machine, please, here?
But, you know, then you go back to Colorado and there's wildfires there every year.
Yeah.
So you get a lot of images that are from
okay.
wildfires.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. All righty.
Yeah.
All right. So you've got these images.
Right.
And right now, predominantly, these images that you're starting with are smoke, correct?
Well, I think it was particularly for this project, for the show that they're in right now.
Well, tell me the name of the show.
Smoke Signals.
I knew there was a connection.
The punchline.
Okay. Now, here's where it really starts getting interesting. So most artists... I would say this is fair. Most artists work somewhat sometimes in collaboration with other people.
Yeah.
Okay. This particular project, as I understand it, is a total collaboration.
It is.
And you guys are still talking.
Right. I know.
Yes. Amazing.
Amazingly.
Yes. Okay.
Right.
So
we've got a lot of chemistry there.
Are you married yet? Or you
know? Close.
Close. Okay.
Or
divorced or whatever.
Right, our mutual spouses, I think, or partners are... watching carefully the development of our relationship.
All right. So talk about that. So you're doing a collaborative, you're making collaborative art in a very sort of intimate way with someone else. And I am completely lost. So help me out here.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I started this, it sounded like something that someone would have thought of already to do mm-hmm. collaborative work. And as it developed, I kept thinking, maybe there's a reason people don't do that. And I was waiting for the other shoe to drop. And to be honest with you, it never did. It was a really productive and enriching experience mm-hmm. that I embarked upon with a dear friend of mine from graduate school who lives in New York right now. We share roots in the Rocky Mountain region. Mm-hmm. Her work deals with the changing landscape and environmental impacts of human beings.
Is she also a printmaker?
She is.
That's handy if you're going to collaborate, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Huh? Yeah, right.
So we both work in really similar ways, like the Xerox process I'm telling you about. I learned that from her. And a lot of other processes during grad school, there was this kind of back and forth between us that felt very organic and symbiotic. Mm-hmm. And when I moved to Richmond, she moved to New York, and a lot of my friends are there, and I felt sort of the absence of them in my life. So yeah. I wanted to begin a process that built up from the studio visit that happened so often in graduate school mm-hmm. and into a body of work that mm-hmm. could actually encompass two people's perspectives.
Right. So, but two people in different cities.
Different cities.
Okay.
So we started with five prompts. And I think that
five
these
what?
Prompts. So
prompts.
Uh-huh. So like a reason to make work.
Okay.
So these five prompts were the way that we were going to navigate working collaboratively. And I think they're actually really good prompts if you want to do anything collaboratively with someone or try something new. So the first one was fairly simple, maybe a traditional collaboration. We had 4x6 inches pieces of paper that we sent back to one another mm-hmm. via the mail. And we ended
the
up...
The mail?
Oh, yeah.
Snail mail?
Yeah, we lost them several times.
Wow.
Yeah.
Why mail?
Well, there was several levels of this collaboration. I mean, okay. We're working with printmaking, which a lot of people think is an antiquated medium.
Right.
But in the digital age, in an age of graphic reproduction at an almost like impossibly fast rate,
right.
You're seeing printmaking actually at every level. And I would argue that some net art is another form of printmaking
right.
because it doesn't have limits on who sees it.
Right.
There's not a cost limitation to who mm-hmm. it's available to.
So it gets back to that word of democratic that you used earlier.
Right.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I have a very liberal perspective of what printmaking is, but
right.
we wanted to explore what its history was and how this moment might be one of the most important to explore, like, that history in a contemporary
context.
So
the first prompt was what again?
To send two postcards back and forth
uh-huh.
via the mail.
So they weren't wrapped in anything?
Well, they were in envelopes.
Okay. All right.
So
4x6 postcards.
Over 9 months.
And these, what images did you start with?
They were two images that were almost like sister images of the reflection of water and a lake.
Okay.
And they ended in something that looked like a Tibetan mandala and another that maybe looked like a Venn diagram.
Really?
They went through some really crazy iterations. I wish we still had evidence of them. We scanned them. But there were moments where they would arrive and be like stuck to the envelope.
Right.
And I would have to like.
So what kind of materials were you using to make these?
Acrylic, collage,
everything.
The newspaper,
uh-huh.
anything that I could get my hands on.
So you get this thing in the mail, you open it up, you get it unstuck from the envelope,
right.
and then you just...
make a mess on it.
Yeah, right. Have at it.
It was one of the more liberating processes because you can't
really?
Think about it. You got to really be fast and just send it back because the thing that took the longest was getting them through the mail.
But this was 9 months, so
yeah.
it must have been... that's also the gestation period of a child.
I know.
Is there any correlation to that?
I tell you, putting up this show in September, it felt like, here she is, our bouncing baby show.
right. How many postcards did you end up with?
Well, there were two, so 40, but 20 each.
Okay. All right.
A fair amount.
Right.
And I think, you know, once we started FedExing them, it went really fast because the USPS, they have my heart and my admiration, but
right.
not
your business.
Not my business.
Yeah, yeah. So you're FedExing.
Right.
Oh, that's fabulous. Okay. So is that all that's in the show?
No, there's the other four prompts.
Ah, yes.
I'll go through them kind of quickly, maybe. The second one was...
No, you can take your time.
Okay.
Yeah.
The second was also sort of traditional. You would start a print, complete it to about halfway, and then send it to the other person to finish.
Ah.
And this was where we kind of began diverging on our approaches in a way that we were able to articulate at the end. So whenever I would get a print, and my collaborator, I should mention, her name is Genevieve Lowe.
Mm-hmm.
She would send me an image and I would get it and I would just kind of stare at it for a week, 2 weeks, really facing head on.
These abstract images, these representational, these, what are we looking at?
There was a wide variety of them.
Okay.
Some of them very much were abstract. Others, I could almost figure out what it was
right.
or I knew the lineage of the imagery
okay.
through her work.
Mm-hmm.
But every time I would get them, it would be like a letter in code. And I felt like I had to break the code. And I think it was a real experience in facing your own like impulse control.
Mm-hmm.
Because as artists, I think we want things to kind of happen quickly, be able to know intuitively how to respond to something. And that is associated with your own authorship. And I didn't author these images.
Right.
So I had to decipher what she was trying to give me, what information I was
receiving.
So
you had no conversation about these?
No.
Yeah, so it just arrived.
Right.
Because I'm thinking you've got this image. It's a whatever it is. And you literally would spend a week with it?
Longer than that. A
really?
Lot of them took a really long time.
What was going on inside your head?
I got frustrated a lot. I would be like, what is this thing? I don't know what to do with it. It's not... I mean, her signature is a really pronounced one. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, I honor it so
when
much.
When you say
that
signature, what do you mean?
Her drawing style, it has a
right.
real beautiful,
okay. mm-hmm.
Signature to it.
Okay.
So I would look at it and think I had to maintain some integrity of that imprint. Mm-hmm. And just wind my mind around and around how to do it. And eventually I would come up with something that felt like I had cracked the code. It was exactly the sensation.
Yeah, I was going to say, so this was sort of a puzzle for you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so on the other hand, she would get my images and felt as though she was navigating through a territory that was presented to mm-hmm. her.
Right.
So those two themes of code breaking and navigation mm-hmm. and also like seeing through to like another side of something. Mm-hmm. Those are themes that are really present in the exhibition.
Okay.
Which were very much in the making. I think that consistency of what happened in the making being present in the
code
image.
Code breaking and navigation.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Smoke signals.
Yeah, smoke signals. Yeah, right. It all comes around, goes around.
Yeah.
So that's two.
The third one was a written prompt, and that one was fairly straightforward. We wrote each other something to respond to. Mm-hmm. She sent me a haiku, and I sent her some text from an artist book. Mm-hmm. And those images, I think, actually populated a lot of different images, like the influence of that text cropped up in other places.
What do you mean?
Well, I think I made one piece that was in direct response to the haiku, but it didn't sit right with me. And then as I continued to make pieces...
I mean, was her haiku really, I mean, strictly haiku according to haiku kinds of rules and,
yes.
and limitations? Okay.
Right. It was right. The three stanzas.
Okay.
Right. So I made a print that was in three stanzas, but it felt too literal. Mm-hmm. And in the end, there's this sculpture in the show that's it's kind of a giant box. And I think... you look inside of it and it's meant to shift the viewer's perspective. And in the end, I think that box was the best mm-hmm. response to the haiku.
To the haiku. How many responses would you have to something like that before you'd get to where you thought this
Well, I thought I was
works.
Going in a different direction, but I hit the haiku. So. Right.
But your text was from an artist book.
Yeah.
So this wasn't something that you had written. This was something you just...
No, it was
Xeroxed.
In a lot of ways, yeah, I appropriated the language. Right. It was a book by Julie Chen, who is one of the most magnificent bookmakers that I've seen. She mm-hmm. makes books that are games, books that are riddles, books that are deeply poetic. Mm-hmm. And I've been spending a lot of time at, as I mentioned, the VCU Book Arts Library. And I just couldn't really pass up the chance to use some of the text
right.
in this format.
How did she respond to that text?
I mean, in really beautiful and complicated images that mm-hmm. I think there's something otherworldly, and then you can kind of place yourself in them and then you pull back mm-hmm. out. I mean, it's really a experiential viewing process.
Okay. So I forgot which prompt we were on. What are we on? Three, four?
Yeah, three or four. There were the last two was that we were to send each other endemic objects from our location. So things that were native to mm-hmm. where we were. And or to fabricate an object, because we both did both. She sent me a spur, like from your cowboy boot.
Right.
And I sent her a railroad tie from the railroad that runs right next to the James.
Wait a minute, you sent her an entire railroad tie?
Well, no, I guess they're not ties, they're just the spike.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the spike.
Yeah.
And then she sent me this just totally bizarre sculpture that I had to wrestle with for weeks and weeks.
Right.
And I sent her some fabricated rocks that she made an entire body of sculptures based on.
So out of this whole process, because mm-hmm. we're getting short on time, believe
sure.
it or not, is there any way you can articulate what came out of this for you in terms of this whole process?
Sure. I think it depends on what perspective you're coming from. But from my own, I think this process has been a real meditation, an exploration in a contemporary time period of mm-hmm. how printmaking exists
oh,
as a really valid, uh-huh. Also vibrant and alive art form.
So you validated printmaking in the 21st century.
Yeah.
That was
just
good.
Me and another person.
Yes.
We did it all on
Fabulous.
Our
Fabulous.
I think validate is
a girl.
Maybe not the best word choice, right?
No, I think it's good. Validate it for yourself.
Well, to prove that printmaking can be a responsive art
form.
Well,
this is really interesting.
I hope this
is interesting. Yeah.
Well, we had a lot of fun with it, and I think that it didn't follow that path of set a goal and then do the steps X, Y, and Z to execute it. It really was more of an intuitive, interpretive.
What about
process.
Website and show? Let's try and squeeze that in here.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
What's your website?
My website is my name, PalomaBarjaBordas.com. Okay. Have fun with that. I'll All spell right. it out very
quickly. Yes, go ahead
very
quickly.
PalomaBarjaGh. BORDAS.com.
Okay.
And you can visit the show at Sediment Gallery. It's up through the end of the month, and that's on 2nd and Grace.
Right.
And if you just Google the name, Sediment Arts, their website pops up. It's a wonderful artist-run space.
Fabulous.
Yes.
Well, welcome to Richmond.
I mean, thank you so much.
Only 1 year. It sounds like sounds like you're smoking. or smoke signaling.
I deserve that.
One or the other. Yeah, no, it's fabulous. And thank you very much for coming in and talking about this. That's a lot to try to squeeze into. Where are we? 27 minutes or something? But very interesting.
Thank you so much.
Yes. Well, we are about out of time. So thank you for listening. Hope to see you again on the radio next Wednesday at 12:30. This is Tim Bowring, usually joined with Hugh Joyce, but as I said, not here today. Hoping you have a great week, and you are listening to WHAM 1430 AM and 102.9 FM. Have a great week, and thank you, Paloma.
Thank you, Tim.
Enjoyed it, yes.